Welcome back. This half hour brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right, so the Flyers, they're in a playoff position right now. Big games coming up, especially the next six starting tonight. Jim Jackson, where is this team right now in your opinion?
We'll wait until we see what happens in these next six games, because obviously it could drastically change how they end up this season, whether they're in the playoffs or not. But broad strokes, looking at it, I went into this season hoping for this team to play meaningful games in March and April. They have done that. Hoping for the younger players to take bigger roles on the team, and many of them have done that. I thought that if Carter Hart was going to be here the whole season, and if Sean Couturier and Cam Atkinson came back and were very important players all season long, that this team could make the playoffs. Those two things aren't necessarily happening. Obviously, Carter's gone. Cam has been in and out of the lineup, and Sean Couturier is now injured and also has seen his ice time reduced. So some of that hasn't come true, and yet they're still very much in contention. So I think when you look back at this season, most of what the organization wanted to accomplish has been accomplished. Now, the cherry on top of that would be a playoff spot, because then you'd get to have some of these players, the 24, 25-year-old players and younger, experience playoff hockey, which is a completely another step in terms of the way hockey is played. So I think they want to get that. At the beginning of the year, I don't think it was a necessity by any stretch. They just wanted to have a competitive team. They've accomplished that goal. But when you sit in a playoff position for 100, and I think it's up to 111 straight days now, the Flyers have been in a playoff position.
Yep.
When you've been in a playoff position that long, you want to be in those playoffs.
No question. So how have the fans reacted to all this? Because it's a great, I mean, not a good, it's a great hockey town. So how have they reacted now to how this has played out?
Well, it's been a roller coaster for them. They've had a lot to deal with. This team has had the Connor Gauthier situation, the Carter Hart situation. They've had some injuries. They've had, obviously, the trade deadline, what to do there. They've had John Tortorella, who is constantly, of course, making news and grabbing headlines. So there's been a lot of, as they say, noise around the team. So for the fans, I think it's been entertaining. I think the fans' biggest desire was to see a team that would play hard and would be competitive. Any sports team in Philadelphia that gets that kind of moniker, gets that kind of label, is automatically popular. In fact, there are some teams in this town that did not win championships that had that moniker that were probably more popular than some of the teams that won championships. You know, some of the 93 Phillies come to mind, and some other teams like that. The Flyers had a couple teams that came close in the 80s that had tremendous followings, even though they didn't win the Cup. So it can definitely happen. This team is obviously, I don't think they're even going to the Stanley Cup Finals, but they have been competitive. They've been competitive with some of the best teams in the league. So I think the fans in general are good with this season. I think the new management team of Keith Jones and Dan Hilferty, along with Danny Briere and going down to Torts, they've done a great job of messaging so that the fans understand what this season's about. That's why they trade Sean Walker at the deadline. I mean, this team's probably more than a couple points in the playoffs right now if they have Sean Walker in the lineup the last month. But they traded him to get a first-round pick because they're still looking at the sky, which is success down the road, continued, sustained success. I mean, being a Stanley Cup contender year after year, that's where this team wants to end up. So they've managed to stay competitive while still accumulating some more assets for the future. So I think that's a job well done, and I think most of the fans realize that.
Which, by the way, I admire, because the one thing you don't want to be, and I use this all the time regardless of sport, you don't want to be the Atlanta Hawks. Good enough to make the playoffs, not good enough to advance, which means you're not in a spot to get a quality draft pick to change things, which has been there over and over and over again. And it sounds like Keith Jones and his staff have an eye on much more than just making the playoffs in future years.
They do, and certainly more than what the Flyers were the last decade, which basically was in the playoffs one year, out the next,
right,
and then in, and then the last three they haven't been in at all. So they definitely see that you have to accumulate assets. They instead of drafting a sure thing pick, with their high pick last year, they go for Matvei Mishkov, who might not be here in 3 years, you know, for 3 years. But when he gets here, it's probably going to be that high-end kind of talent you need to have. So they're forward-thinking for sure. And I think the fans are aboard with that. The fans have had enough of the you know, being, as you say, the Atlanta Hawks of the NHL, which I don't know if the Flyers would even say what they were that the last 3 years because they were out of the playoffs. But during the 2010s, they after they went to the finals in 2010, and then they had a couple of second-round bids there the next 2 years, they then went every other year in the playoffs out after one round for 10, 11 years, a record for the NHL. Mm-hmm. So they literally were just in and out, in and out, in and out. And they were never terrible, but they were never great. And so I think this management team's aim is to get to that great level again. And I think the fans are willing to sacrifice. And in saying that, they haven't had to sacrifice the way, let's say, the Sixers tried to do it by just, you know, tanking three straight years. They've been competitive, are actually still alive for a playoff spot with less than 2 weeks to go. So it hasn't really been as painful as perhaps it was for the Sixers fans.
Yes, Dick Girardi and I have had many a conversation about the Sixers rebuild. All right. So, I want to ask you about John Tortorella. The fans will see the personality, they'll see the quotes and so forth. What kind of coach is he? And is he the kind of coach that gets the best out of his talent as you watch him play, as you watch him up close?
I do believe he is. First of all, let me say this about John. The John Tortorella that you see in press conferences most of the time, because he just had a press conference today that was outstanding. If you have a chance to go on YouTube or wherever and watch it, it's a great talk about coaching and about expectations and about his own style. And he was very forthright after he criticized the team the other night. And it was just a great press conference today. He does give the great press conferences, but he also has those where he walks in and is done in 30 seconds, and you know, where he berates a reporter or whatever. That's not really the John Tortorella you see very much away from the ice. He's one of the nicest human beings I've been around. He's very caring. He's a big animal lover, but he knows that. But he's also just he cares about human beings. He cares about these players as men. So he is a great guy. His temper, he definitely has a temper, and his temper gets the best of him sometimes. But the bottom line is, as a coach, he's a great coach. This team is not in a spot right now, sitting in a playoff spot with less than 2 weeks to go in the season without John Tortorella as the coach. I can name so many examples of players where he disciplined them in some way, and then they ended up playing some of their best hockey immediately afterwards. Now, there is a thought, and I'm not saying there isn't some validity to this, that because he goes to the whip like that, that he might have a shorter shelf life than other coaches. I will point out that he was in Columbus a long time.
He was.
And that team, if you look at their overall record as a franchise, before John Tortorella was there, near the bottom of the NHL. While John Tortorella was there, pretty good. And since John Tortorella left, at the bottom of the NHL. So, I mean, he's a good coach. He definitely knows how to get players to play hard. Some players don't like it. Some players don't like it, and they can't get along with it. And usually, you know, they will separate. They'll go their separate ways. Other players don't like it maybe in the beginning, but tend to like it later on. I talked to several of his former players. Zach Werenski comes to mind, the defenseman for the Columbus Blue Jackets, who said, early on, he just drove me crazy. But he now thinks that he's the reason he's such a good player. So I think you hear a lot more of those kind of players than you do the ones who didn't like John. More that give him credit for making them better players. And that's what he's all about. That's why he got back into this. He loves the teaching. He loves the making them better players, better men. And I think that's what drives him. And I think he's still very good at it.
See, Jim, that's exactly the answer I expected to hear, because I've always been big on him as a coach, always. And I've always heard behind the scenes that, hey, look, what you see at the press conference is not the guy. And I'm glad you were able to at least talk about that, because...
Yeah, it isn't at all. He's very polite. He's very respectful. He's always interested in finding things out about other people. About if you're having a conversation with him, it's not him just telling you about himself. He wants to find out about you. So he's a great human being, and that part of it, he cares about his players too. And you know, as we all probably dealt with our parents at one point or another, you know, sometimes tough love does have to be applied, and John Tortorella does use tough love quite often, and some of the players can handle it, some can't, but the ones that can are probably the guys you want to ride with into the playoffs, and, you know, trying to get to where you want to get to eventually. So I think there's a method to his madness for sure.
So down the stretch, Sabres, Jackets, Canadiens, then Rangers, Devils, and Caps. How do you feel about how the latter part of the schedule plays out for Philadelphia?
I hesitate to do that.
Well, no, I'm not saying wins and losses, but I'm talking about the opportunities, Jim.
They had a gauntlet of seven straight games against top 10 teams, and then they had six straight against teams that were nowhere near the top 10.
Right.
And they made it through that gauntlet playing pretty good hockey, gaining some points, feeling pretty good about themselves, and they haven't won since.
They got to the
stretch where they're playing teams out of the playoffs. So, you look at the schedule, there's absolutely winnable games there. There's huge games, too. Obviously, the Washington game is looking like it's going to be a huge contest, so there's going to be some games in there you have to win, but I'm thinking if they win four out of the six, it's going to be pretty tough. Let's say 8 points or 8 or 9 points. Maybe they get an overtime loss in one of the other ones. 8 or 9 points, to me, will probably get them in, given the pace of the race, which has not been exactly quick here of late. The teams have been really struggling once they get into playoff position or get near it. So we'll see. You better watch out for those Penguins. They're suddenly hot. They've got, obviously, the pedigree with Crosby and Malkin and Letang and those guys. And all these teams, one of them gets hot right now, and they all have 7 or 8, 9 games remaining. Actually, it's like 6 through 8 now, 6, 7, 8 games remaining. But, you get hot in that stretch and win 5 or 6 of those, you're probably going to make the playoffs, any of those teams. So it's wild. There's so many teams now involved. The Flyers have helped to involve some of those teams by struggling here of late, but now you've got about 5 teams battling for 2 spots, and it'll be quite interesting. But for the Flyers, I think, something like 4-1-1 or 4-2 might even do it.
Yeah.
3-3-2, maybe. I don't know. But 8 or 9 points out of that group, I think, puts a lot of pressure on those other teams to play some really good hockey. So they should be all right. But they, not to sound like a cliche coach here, but they basically do have to take it game by game right now. They've got to get a win. They haven't had a win in their last month. They've got to get a win. And that starts Friday in Buffalo. John Tortorella today talked about the fact that they're going to go in, the coaching staff, and talk with the players tomorrow before practice and basically talk mindset. And this basically sounds like that meeting you have where you basically set the tone for what's left of this season. And he's a little bit concerned, I think, that there's this thought out there that nobody expected the Flyers to do anything this year. So here they are. They're regressing to the mean. This was going to happen all along. And He said BS to that in the press conference, and I think he's going to say that to his players. He said, we're here. We deserve to be here. Now let's go out and grab it. And we'll see how they respond on Friday.
Yeah, because that's exactly what, for example, I'll tell my broadcasting class. I said, you can't do the next game. You can only do the game in front of you. So when you hear the cliche, one game at a time, I said, that's actually your job, too.
Oh, absolutely. I have a theory. I know some broadcasters who, for instance, this weekend, so the Flyers are playing Friday, Saturday, and some of them start doing some of their work for Saturday before the game on Friday, broadcasters. And they can do that. I personally can't do that because I think I'll start calling Columbus Blue Jackets players Buffalo Sabres players because we're playing Columbus on Saturday, Buffalo on Friday.
Right.
I need to keep that compartment, what do they call that? You put it to a compartment, keep it in that one compartment. And basically, that's the next game. And then I'll worry about Saturday. I'll crash. I'll work very hard between the games Friday and Saturday and get ready for the Columbus game. But for now, the Flyers just have to worry about the Sabres on Friday. A win there, the Sabres are pretty much out if the Flyers win that one in regulation. You can start eliminating teams and start thinking positive about themselves again. Because this team really, there have been teams before, even Flyers teams that I've covered, that have been in contention for the playoffs, but they were there because a goalie was hot or because they're pretty fortunate.
Yep.
This team has outplayed teams pretty consistently this year. They can do that. They could outplay teams all 6 of these games the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do, their chances are pretty good. They've got to get some saves. It might be from the big Russian or they're going to get the saves from now, but they got to get some saves because they aren't getting them lately. Their save percentage since the middle of January is about 20 percentage points below any team in the NHL. It's very hard to win with that. And I'm not saying Sam Harrison has been terrible. They've given up a lot of 10-bell chances, but they just haven't been getting those big clutch saves from whoever's been between the pipes. And they got to get those in these final 6. Who that goalie's going to be might be one of the more interesting stories.
Jim, you're the best. Thanks so much. Really appreciate the time today.
All right. Appreciate talking with you guys. Enjoy the lovely weather.
Yeah. Thanks. Outstanding Jim Jackson. So big time for the Flyers right now. They're more of a thought than the Penguins. It's been a while since we said that. And this half hour has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Coming up in the next half hour, Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, and BTN to talk about the Final Four taking place in Glendale. We continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Want to work for a stable yet growing company? Got it. Want to work for a family-owned business with over 100 years' experience in taking care of customers and employees? Got it. Want to work for a leader in selling more cars and satisfying more customers? Got it. Who has all that? SMC Sunbury Motor Company is looking for technicians across all their departments. Whether you're an entry-level technician, an experienced technician, or someone looking for a career change, Sunbury Motors would love to hear from you. They're looking for technicians for their quick lane, car and light truck service, heavy truck service, body shop, and frame and alignment division. You can apply online at sunburymotors.com, in person at our North 4th Street location, or call Todd at 570-286-7746. Your new career of working on Fords, Kias, Hyundais, Western Star trucks, plus anything that fits in the door, and some things that don't. Join Sunbury Motors. Your new career is waiting for you.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Welcome back. This half hour brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right. So, the Flyers, they're in a playoff position right now. Big games coming up, especially the next six starting tonight. Jim Jackson, where is this team right now, in your opinion?
We'll wait until we see what happens in these next six games, because obviously it could drastically change how they end up this season, whether they're in the playoffs or not. But broad strokes, looking at it, I went into this season hoping for this team to play meaningful games in March and April. They've done that. Hoping for the younger players to take bigger roles on the team, and many of them have done that. I thought that if Carter Hart was going to be here the whole season, and if Sean Couturier and Cam Atkinson came back and were very important players all season long, that this team could make the playoffs. Those two things aren't necessarily happening. Obviously, Carter's gone. Cam has been in and out of the lineup, and Sean Couturier is now injured and also has seen his ice time reduced. So some of that hasn't come true, and yet they're still very much in contention. So I think when you look back at this season, most of what the organization wanted to accomplish has been accomplished. Now, the cherry on top of that would be a playoff spot, because then you'd get to have some of these players, the 24, 25-year-old players and younger, experience playoff hockey, which is a completely another step in terms of the way hockey is played. So I think they want to get that. At the beginning of the year, I don't think it was a necessity by any stretch. They just wanted to have a competitive team. They've accomplished that goal. But when you sit in a playoff position for 100, and I think it's up to 111 straight days now, the Flyers have been in a playoff position.
Yep.
When you've been in a playoff position that long, you want to be in those playoffs.
No question. So how have the fans reacted to all this? Because it's a great, I mean, not a good, it's a great hockey town. So how have they reacted now to how this has played out?
Well, it's been a roller coaster for them. They've had a lot to deal with. This team has had the Cutter Gauthier situation, the Carter Hart situation. They've had some injuries. They've had, obviously, the trade deadline, what to do there. They've had John Tortorella, who is constantly, of course, making news and grabbing headlines. So there's been a lot of, as they say, noise around the team. So for the fans, I think it's been entertaining. I think the fans' biggest desire was to see a team that would play hard and would be competitive. Any sports team in Philadelphia that gets that kind of moniker, gets that kind of label, is automatically popular. In fact, there are some teams in this town that did not win championships that had that moniker that were probably more popular than some of the teams that won championships. You know, some of the 93 Phillies come to mind, and some other teams like that. The Flyers had a couple teams that came close in the 80s that had tremendous followings, even though they didn't win the Cup. So it can definitely happen. This team is obviously, I don't think they're even going to the Stanley Cup Finals, but they have been competitive. They've been competitive with some of the best teams in the league. So I think the fans in general are good with this season. I think the new management team of Keith Jones and Dan Hilferty, along with Danny Briere, and going down to Torts, they've done a great job of messaging so that the fans understand what this season's about. That's why they trade Sean Walker at the deadline. I mean, this team's probably more than a couple points in the playoffs right now if they have Sean Walker in the lineup the last month. But they traded him to get a first-round pick because they're still looking at the eye in the sky, which is success down the road, continued sustained success. I mean, being a Stanley Cup contender year after year, and that's where this team wants to end up. So they've managed to stay competitive while still accumulating some more assets for the future. So I think that's a job well done, and I think most of the fans realize that.
Which, by the way, I admire, because the one thing you don't want to be, and I use this all the time regardless of sport, you don't want to be the Atlanta Hawks. Good enough to make the playoffs, not good enough to advance, which means you're not in a spot to get a quality draft pick to change things, which has been there over and over and over again. And it sounds like Keith Jones and his staff have an eye on much more than just making the playoffs in future years.
They do, and certainly more than what the Flyers were the last decade, which basically was in the playoffs one year, out the next,
right,
and then in, and then the last three, they haven't been in at all. So they definitely see that you have to accumulate assets. They instead of drafting a sure thing pick with their high pick last year, they go for Matvei Mishkov, who might not be here in 3 years, you know, for 3 years, but when he gets here, it's probably going to be that high-end kind of talent you need to have. So they're forward-thinking for sure. And I think the fans are aboard with that. The fans have had enough of the you know, being, as you say, the Atlanta Hawks of the NHL, which I don't know if the Flyers would even say what they were that the last 3 years because they were out of the playoffs. But right, during the 2010s, they after they went to the finals in 2010, and then they had a couple of second-round bids there the next 2 years, they then went every other year in the playoffs out after one round for 10, 11 years, a record for the NHL. Mm-hmm. So they literally were just in and out, in and out, in and out. And they were never terrible, but they were never great. And right, so I think this management team's aim is to get to that great level again. And I think the fans are willing to sacrifice. And in saying that, they haven't had to sacrifice the way, let's say, the Sixers tried to do it by just, you know, taking three straight years. They've been competitive and are actually still alive for a playoff spot with less than 2 weeks to go. So it hasn't really been as painful as perhaps it was for the Sixers fans.
Yes, Dick Girardi and I have had many a conversation about the Sixers rebuild. All right. So, I want to ask you about John Tortorella. The fans will see the personality, they'll see the quotes and so forth. What kind of coach is he? And is he the kind of coach that gets the best out of his talent as you watch him play, as you watch him up close?
I do believe he is. First of all, let me say this about John. The John Tortorella that you see in press conferences most of the time, because he just had a press conference today that was outstanding. If you have a chance to go on YouTube or wherever and watch it, it's a great talk about coaching,
yep,
and about expectations and about his own style. And he was very forthright after he criticized the team the other night. And it was just a great press conference today. He does give the great press conferences, but he also has those where he walks in and is done in 30 seconds, and you know, where he berates a reporter or whatever. That's not really the John Tortorella you see very much away from the ice. He's one of the nicest human beings I've been around. He's very caring. He's a big animal lover. Everybody knows that. But he's also just he cares about human beings. He cares about these players as men. So he is a great guy. His temper, he definitely has a temper, and his temper gets the best of him sometimes. But the bottom line is, as a coach, he's a great coach. This team is not in a spot right now, sitting in a playoff spot with less than 2 weeks to go in the season without John Tortorella as the coach. I can name so many examples of players where he disciplined them in some way and then they ended up playing some of their best hockey immediately afterwards. Now, there is a thought, and I'm not saying that there isn't some validity to this, that because he goes to the whip like that, that he might have a shorter shelf life than other coaches. I will point out that he was in Columbus a long time.
Yeah, he was.
And that team, if you look at their overall record as a franchise, before John Tortorella was there, near the bottom of the NHL. While John Tortorella was there, pretty good. And since John Tortorella left, at the bottom of the NHL. So, I mean, he's a good coach. He definitely knows how to get players to play hard. Some players don't like it. Some players don't like it, and they can't get along with it. And usually, you know, they will separate. They'll go their separate ways. Other players don't like it maybe in the beginning, but tend to like it later on. I've talked to several of his former players. Zach Werenski comes to mind, the defenseman for the Columbus Blue Jackets, who said early on, he just drove me crazy, but he now thinks that he's the reason he's such a good player. So I think you hear a lot more of those kind of players than you do the ones who didn't like John, more that give him credit for making them better players. And that's what he's all about. That's why he got back into this. He loves the teaching. He loves the making them better players, better men. And I think that's what drives him, and I think he's still very good at it.
See, Jim, that's exactly the answer I expected to hear, because I've always been big on him as a coach, always. And I've always heard behind the scenes that, hey, look, what you see at the press conference is not the guy. And I'm glad you were able to at least talk about that, because...
Yeah, it isn't at all. He's very polite. He's very respectful. He's always interested in finding things out about other people, about if you're having a conversation with him, it's not him just telling you about himself. He wants to find out about you. So he's a great human being, and that part of it, he cares about his players too. And you know, as we all probably dealt with our parents at one point or another, you know, sometimes tough love does have to be applied, and John Tortorella does use tough love quite often, and some of the players can handle it, some can't. But the ones that can are probably the guys you want to ride with into the playoffs, you know, trying to get to where you want to get to eventually. So I think there's a method to his madness for sure.
So down the stretch, Sabres, Jackets, Canadiens, then Rangers, Devils, and Caps. How do you feel about how the latter part of the schedule plays out for Philadelphia?
I hesitate to do that.
Well, no, I'm not saying wins and losses, but I'm talking about the opportunities, Jim.
The gauntlet of seven straight games against top 10 teams. Yeah. And then they had six straight against teams that were nowhere near the top 10.
Right.
And they made it through that gauntlet playing pretty good hockey, gaining some points, feeling pretty good about themselves, and they haven't won since.
Yeah.
The stretch where they're playing teams out of the playoffs. So, you know, you look at the schedule, there's absolutely winnable games there. There's huge games, too. Obviously, the Washington game is looking like it's going to be a huge contest. So there's going to be some games in there you have to win, but I'm thinking if they win four out of the six, it's going to be pretty tough. Let's say 8 points or 8 or 9 points. Maybe they get an overtime loss in one of the other ones. 8 or 9 points, to me, will probably get them in, given the pace of the race, which has not been exactly quick here of late. The teams have been really struggling once they get into playoff position or get near it. So we'll see. You better watch out for those Penguins. They're suddenly hot. They've got, obviously, the pedigree with Crosby and Malkin and Letang and those guys. And all these teams, one of them gets hot right now, and you know they all have 7 or 8, 9 games remaining. Actually, it's like 6 through 8 now, 6, 7, 8 games remaining. But, you know, you get hot in that stretch and win 5 or 6 of those, you're probably going to make the playoffs, any of those teams. So it's wild. There's so many teams now involved. The Flyers have helped to involve some of those teams by struggling here of late. But now you've got about 5 teams battling for 2 spots, and it'll be quite interesting. But for the Flyers, I think, you know, something like 4-1-1 or 4-2 might even do it.
Yeah.
You know, 3-3-2 maybe. I don't know, but 8 or 9 points out of that group, I think, puts a lot of pressure on those other teams to play some really good hockey. So they should be all right. But they, not to sound like a cliche coach here, but they basically do have to take it game by game right now. They've got to get a win. They haven't had a win in their last 5. They've got to get a win, and that starts Friday in Buffalo. John Tortorella today talked about the fact that they're going to go in, the coaching staff, and talk with the players tomorrow before practice and basically talk mindset. And this basically sounds like that meeting you have where you basically set the tone for what's left of this season. And he's a little bit concerned, I think, that there's this thought out there that nobody expected the Flyers to do anything this year. So here they are. They're regressing to the mean. This was going to happen all along. And He said BS to that in the press conference, and I think he's going to say that to his players. He said, we're here We deserve to be here. Now let's go out and grab it. And we'll see how they respond on Friday.
Yeah, because, you know, that's exactly what, for example, I'll tell my broadcasting class. I said, you can't do the next game. You can only do the game in front of you. So when you hear the cliche, one game at a time, I said, that's actually your job, too.
Oh, absolutely. I have a theory. You know, I know some broadcasters who, for instance, this weekend, the Flyers are playing Friday, Saturday, yep. And some of them start doing some of their work for Saturday before the game on Friday, broadcasters. And they can do that. I personally can't do that because right. I think I'll start calling Columbus Blue Jackets players Buffalo Sabres players, because we're playing Columbus on Saturday, Buffalo on Friday.
Right.
I need to keep that compartment, what do they call that? You put it to a compartment, keep it in that one compartment. And basically, that's the next game. And then I'll worry about Saturday. I'll crash. I'll work very hard between the games Friday and Saturday and get ready for the Columbus game. But for now, the Flyers just have to worry about the Sabres on Friday. A win there. The Sabres are pretty much out if the Flyers win that one in regulation. You can start eliminating teams and start thinking positive about themselves again. Because this team really, yeah, I see, there have been teams before, even Flyers teams that I've covered, that have been in contention for the playoffs, but they were there because the goalie was hot or because they were, mm-hmm. they were pretty fortunate.
Yep.
This team has outplayed teams pretty consistently this year. They can do that. They could outplay teams all six of these games the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do, their chances are pretty good. They've got to get some saves. It might be from the big Russian, or they're going to get the saves from now, but they got to get some saves because they aren't getting them lately. Their save percentage since the middle of January is about 20 percentage points below any team in the NHL. It's very hard to win with that. And I'm not saying Sam Harrison has been terrible. They've given up a lot of 10-bell chances, but they just haven't been getting those big clutch saves from whoever's been between the pipes, and they got to get those in these final six. Who that goalie's going to be might be one of the more interesting stories.
Jim, you're the best. Thanks so much. Really appreciate the time today.
All right. Appreciate talking with you guys. Enjoy the lovely weather.
Yeah. Thanks. Outstanding Jim Jackson. So big time for the Flyers right now. They're more of a thought than the Penguins. It's been a while since we said that. And this half hour has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Coming up in the next half hour, Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, and BTN to talk about the Final Four taking place in Glendale. We continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn what they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by, in this half hour, Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV, doesn't matter what your insurance needs are. They'll make sure that you are fully covered. They'll also do everything they can to save you money. Why? Customer service means everything. Sure. Do they have a lot of customers? Yes. But do they give each customer individual attention? Absolutely, because that is what customer service is all about. It's all at Purdy Insurance, the best in the business. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. We all know that the price for a ticket in Cleveland to see this edition of the Final Four on the women's side tonight is very, very high. And that's UConn and Iowa playing tonight, and South Carolina NC State playing tonight. That will be in Cleveland. Meanwhile, in Glendale, home of the Arizona Cardinals, you will have tomorrow's games featuring UConn taking on Alabama and NC State and Purdue. We did mention earlier the UConn plane. They were supposed to leave at 6 o'clock. I think they left Bradley International at 1:15 in the morning. And they got to Sky Harbor at 3:15 in the morning, which would be the equivalent of getting there at 6:15 in the morning Eastern time. So not the best of trips, but again, this is the way it goes in the collegiate world these days. I somebody does this all the time. I can't even begin to tell you the number of delayed flights in the last couple of years that we've had, because that's just the nature of it. And you would think at 2024 it would be better, and instead it's worse. But, I mean, UConn had to deal with it. We've dealt with it. You know, everybody has dealt with it. Everybody has. Even Mike DeCourcy, believe it or not, has dealt with it. And, Mike, I heard you're moving back. It's great to have you back on the show. Thanks so much for being here, Mike.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Doing well and going back to Pittsburgh, I understand.
I will be moving back to Pittsburgh pretty much as soon as the Final Four is over.
That's great. Well, welcome home. All right. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Okay. So I want to start with Zach Edey because you and I have both seen a lot of him either on video or a lot of him in person. We know what the numbers say. 9.7 fouls drawn per game versus 1.9 fouls that he draws per game. You and I have watched a lot of him. The question now is about how difficult he is to officiate. How do you view him?
You know, Steve, he's no more difficult to officiate than anyone else if you call the game the way the rules are written. It's
right.
Really that simple. It's difficult to officiate everybody because the game is fast and powerful and quick and all of that. But you have to look at it that he should be no more difficult than anyone else. And I will tell you that after the game yesterday, I got a chance to speak to Tobe Awaka from Tennessee, who fouled out in 13 minutes. And he acknowledged that all the video prep they did to try to prepare to understand how to defend Edey, he said, once you're out there and you're with him on the floor and you feel that power and size, it doesn't matter how much prep you do. It's just a totally different thing than anything you've ever experienced. And Danny Sprinkle, the then Utah State coach in the second round, and now the coach at Washington as they move into the Big Ten next year, said that it's very difficult to defend him without fouling. It drives opposing fans crazy because they see it and they see that their guy is getting called for a lot of fouls. But the alternative is to back off and let him play. And if you do that, then he's probably going to score a lot of points. Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, then you risk putting your players, your big guys, off the floor. So somebody's going to have to make a decision at some point to either zone them or to just go ahead and back away and not try to challenge him physically and see how successful he's able to be in that circumstance.
Yeah, because what people understand, you can put an arm into his back, but you can't put two. And every time I see that, not every time, but many times I see fouls calls because, look, they're trying to do whatever they can to hold their position. They're using both arms to do it. That's one of the reasons why they're getting called for fouls.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, look, if you look back at the Ohio State game that the Buckeyes won in Columbus, they didn't try to hold their space as much as they tried to attack the basketball.
Yes.
Both with help defenders and also with their big guys. Their big guys ZT in particular, was really effective at attacking the basketball. And so it really, they did have some success in not allowing him to catch the ball, but it was more to them about when he brought the basketball into position, trying to attack it and doing that without fouling.
Because, look, we always talk about big men, when they'll get the ball, they'll balance themselves, when they should just catch and shoot. I'm talking about the catch and shoot plays. And they'll make themselves smaller. He has developed a bad habit. He brings that ball down around his waist, and that's where, like, people are seeing more deflections off of that, because that's one thing you do notice. He has developed that little habit that's allowing people to attack the ball like you're talking about.
He does. Because they are such a proficient three-point shooting team statistically, he does get some space. The teams, and Zach's an excellent passer out of the post, so yeah. He does get some space. But he will, at times, once he initiates that move, he does allow defenders to come at him, and he needs to maybe, on occasion, fake that and then get the defender moving and then kick it out behind them for an open three, and then maybe the defender will come more slowly. But right now, he's not doing that.
All right. Braden Smith is the engine that runs this entire deal. The maturity of him as a point guard, now as a sophomore about to become a junior, where's the development you've seen in him?
Well, first of all, he's one of the most serious young people that we've encountered about his conditioning. He takes it to an absurd level, and I mean that in the best sense of the word, but he does, because he knows he has to. And because he does that, he can play a lot of minutes. Because he does that, he's able to rebound defensively for a guy his size at a level that I've seen from very few players. His defensive rebounding is incredible. He's just not the same player that he was a year ago, and that's largely because even though he was very serious about his body as a high school player, he's getting more mature. He's had college training, which, as good as the people were around him in Westfield, and they were great, every day being in college with the nutrition and all of that has been an aid to him. And having been through last year's disappointment, I think, really fueled that team. I asked Mason Gillis about this yesterday. I mean, I've watched them play a ton. You've watched them play a ton. The old Spinal Tap amp that goes to 11. I mean, they play hard, but yesterday it went to 11. They did not ever relent yesterday. When there was a loose ball on the floor, they attacked it with a ferocity that even as hard playing as Purdue teams typically are, I have never seen before.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I'll tell you a guy that to me typified it yesterday, because sometimes I wonder, is Fletcher Lawyer. That's as hard as I've seen him play was yesterday.
I was delighted to see that, because I've known his dad for more than 30 years. His father was an assistant at Cincinnati, then went to work in the NBA, and obviously worked really hard in helping his sons, Foster and Fletcher, become really good college basketball players. And Fletcher had a really tough February last year. Yep. And when they played that Fairleigh Dickinson game, he was the one guy that was ready to make shots, but nobody wanted to embrace it because he had been so poor at the end of his freshman year. So then he went through another tough early February, and they played Michigan, and he shot himself out of it. Even though he didn't make shots that day, he became aggressive again, and that's continued on all the way through yesterday. So I got a chance to see his dad and tell him how great Fletch played. He was outstanding.
Yeah, he really was. That's one of the better games I've seen him play. They've got NC State now, and we know there'll be a lot of talk about DJ Burns. I understand that. We'll get to that in a moment. I find the Diarra situation fascinating, because Penn State had a wide receiver years and years ago named Gerald Smith. It was spring practice, so I know in Ramadan what he could and he couldn't do. Well, Diarra, we're in an era where hydrate, 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 except he's not doing that right now. How interested are you in that and how he navigates that, especially in a game where bigs are going to be so important?
Yeah, it's really fascinating that there were several players in March Madness to this point that had to go through that and had to monitor sundown, and they could get him a power bar or whatever once the sun hit the horizon and all of that. It's a tough deal to go through, and I suspect that they will play the first game on Sunday. On Saturday, and I don't know what the rules are on that, though. I will confess. Like, is it sundown where you are? You know,
right?
Because if it's sundown in your home time zone, that's a whole different deal.
Right, exactly. It is. It's 6:09 as opposed to they're on Mountain Standard Time, which would be 3:09, right?
Yeah, I don't know what the deal. I don't know what the rules are on that. I suspect it's where you are, which is not good news.
Interesting. How do you view Burns and watching him play?
Oh, I think that he's one of those guys who understands the game at a next level, and really bright, and understands how to use his body, how to use his strength to his advantage. He has a great touch and an astonishing touch, and then he's a great passer. And it's really cool to see. The thing I can't figure out, Steve, is why wasn't this like this all year long? Why weren't they this good? Why wasn't he this good all year long? Because I've seen him before, and I know he's capable of this, but he did not have this kind of year.
And neither did they as a team, because they had no quad one wins until they got to the ACC tournament.
They have played 9 consecutive elimination games. Any game they lost from the start of the ACC tournament was it. If they had lost the final to Carolina, it wasn't, oh, nice job getting the final, we'll put you in. No, they had to win the automatic bid, and they did. And then, of course, like everybody, you don't get here unless you win every game as well. And it hasn't, you know, I thought for a while that some of it was playing that house money concept where they can afford to play loose. But yesterday, in a situation where other teams that have gotten that deep have looked at it and said, oh, man, you know, like, we're this close. And then they got a little wobbly. They were better when the pressure was on than Duke was, because they were behind 6-8 points as the 10-minute mark approached. And that's when they flipped it and completely turned the game on its head.
Absolutely. Now, on the other side, we'll get to UConn in a moment. Alabama, look, when Penn State played Alabama with Nate Oates as the head coach, Dick Girardi and I in the pregame said, look, there are 3 results he prefers on offense: layups, free throws, 3-pointers. Well, you're watching it play out in real time right now. They hit, what, 15 of them in winning? Are they going to need 15 again, idealistically, on Saturday against UConn?
Oh, I think that something like that, yeah. I think that they absolutely are going to have to shoot remarkably well. As you know, you saw the number one offense, the number two offense in college basketball go up against UConn's defense and get completely broken. A 30-0 run by UConn against Illinois on Saturday. So it's going to be hard for Alabama. But, you know, one of the things that I love about that game it was maybe a little bit overlooked by those who don't follow the sport as closely. It was, you know, because of the transfer portal and how things are changing, there's always an overreaction to anything that changes in college sports. Mm-hmm. And so this past summer, I read an article where coaches anonymously were telling a reporter that nobody's going to recruit number 50 to 100 anymore. That you know, if you're a top 75 type player, that nobody's going to recruit you. And so I'm watching Jaren Stevenson on Saturday, the number 50 prospect in last year's class. It was from Chapel Hill, and Alabama took him away from Chapel Hill. Go out and go 5 of 8 from 3-point range. His team is loaded with transfers. yeah. guys who are first-year transfers and second-year transfers. And yet, despite that, there's a freshman who wasn't even a McDonald's All-American or top 25 recruit or whatever, making the difference in an Elite Eight game. I absolutely love that.
Is there an under any UConn is obviously dissected every, you know, it's people seem to feel they know every facet of the team, but is there something even a little bit underrated about them that people don't often talk about when it comes to what Dan Hurley's doing there?
Yeah, I think the most underrated aspect of this, Steve, is that they are trying to repeat with a different team.
Yes.
This is not what we usually see. Yeah. If you go back to 06, 07 Florida, they were the identical starting five.
That's right.
They got deeper because they added Maurice Spates to the bench and a couple other guys, but they had the identical starting five, the same group. You go back to the Walton, the Alcindor Wicks era of UCLA, and they were constantly turning over two or three players, but never as much as this team did. They lost 75% of their scoring, 75% of their scoring from last season's team, and yet here they are. And in a lot of ways, you know, I don't know if they're technically better, like if they played each other, whether last year's team would be this year's team, but they are much more dominant as a team in this season than they were a year ago.
And what's interesting is that because they are a different team, they actually play at a slightly slower pace than last year's team. I don't think a lot of people realize how far back they are in pace, but they also seem to be, with their ball movement in that pace, getting more open shots.
Yes, and that's because there's a number of reasons for that. The first is Tristan Newton. A year ago, remember in February, and this one, you know, it's funny because like the media questioned whether UConn had the point guard they needed.
That's right.
But we weren't the only ones. Dan Hurley questioned for a long time. And they fiddled with Andre Jackson at that position. And then ultimately Newton won the job and carried them, or drove them, I should say, not carried, but drove them to a national title. And he comes back this year and plays like a first-team All-America. So that's a big part of why they get better shots. And then they have better spacing as well, because as great as Jackson was and Jordan Hawkins was, the spacing they get because of Cam Spencer, who's a more proficient deep shooter than anybody from last year's team. They get more space, so they're able to get better shots. So a lot of that comes from the development of guys like Newton, but also the addition of Cam Spencer and what he's meant.
Because remember, transfers in from East Carolina, UConn actually had for them an up and down January a year ago in the Big East.
Right.
And then, boom, took off when he settled in and he took charge for them. And it made a big difference to all of them, including Sanogo. And, of course, Sanogo's now on the two-way with the Bulls. Hey, Mike, always a pleasure. Appreciate it so much. Have a great time out in Scottsdale, Phoenix. I'd say Glendale, but the only time anybody goes there is for the games.
Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate it, Mike. Thanks. Absolutely one of the best in the business and one of the great people in the business, too. Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, Big Ten Network, top shelf all the way. It's always great to talk with Mike. A long time ago, Mike covered Penn State football when he was working in Pittsburgh. And now what he does on the national level with basketball is just phenomenal. This half hour of the show has been brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. There's a lot of insurance needs out there. They can cover it all for you and also do everything they can to save you money, because to them, customer service means everything to them. That's why they're the best in the business. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And coming up in the next half hour, we'll talk with Nate Bauer as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.